The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
And action. Hey everyone, I'm Sarah Gretzky.
And I'm Natalie Buck.
And together, we are the Net Chicks. We're here to talk anything and everything on screen, including what your favorite celebs are up to.
And if you want to know what shows we are absolutely loving and hating, well, thank God, because we will be unpacking for you every single Thursday. So grab your Netflix and some popcorn because the chicks are coming. And scene.
Hey guys, welcome to Who's On Content, a show that explores and dissects the influential, behavioral altering power of content through thought-provoking, culturally relevant, and industry-shifting dialogues. I'm your host, of course, EJ, Head of Special Projects at DBA, and I'm so fucking excited for you to join me on this journey of getting to know the innovative leaders and creators in our insanely addictive industry of content marketing. I mean, if content is the only influencer of behavior, we might as well figure out who's on content. Let's get into it.
Hey, hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Who's on Content. This week, we're catching up with UTA's head of Web3, Leslie Silverman, who's been working on behalf of artists in their communities from the very start of her career and is now leading them into the future of digital art and ownership. As you may know, DBA is gearing up for the launch of its most exciting initiative to date, Influence3, an education and community-based platform where content creators, talent, and their communities can learn about all things Web3, kicking off with a virtual conference on 9/13 featuring artists and thought leaders in the space, including the ultimate creator Steve Aoki and the amazing NFT artist Diana Sinclair. Influence3 will provide the entire creator community with all things they need to prepare for the future of digital influence. Now, if you've been listening to our show for a while, y'all know I haven't been the most enthusiastic about the future of our industry, especially when it comes to Web3 and the metaverse. But I have to say, on the record, after chatting with Leslie, I'm a changed man. I hope you'll approach today's conversation with an open mind and also join us at the virtual conference on 9/13, hosted by yours truly. For more information on Influence3, the conference, and how you can potentially score an exclusive t-shirt designed by Heidi Bivens, the amazing costume designer of the hit show Euphoria, go to joininfluence3.com, and that's join, J-O-I-N, Influence 3, INFLUENC3.com for additional details. We'll also link this in the show notes. Now, on to my amazing conversation with Leslie.
I am so excited because this is like the futuristic, I feel like we need some like Blade Runner music going, because we're going to be talking about all things Web3, NFT, what the hell is all of this mean, with the one and only Leslie Silverman from UTA. How are you, Leslie?
I am so excited to be here.
I mean, Leslie really is going to tell us who's on content when it comes to all things Web3. And so, Leslie, you know how the show goes. We always ask our guests, how do you define content?
So I've studied up for this question.
Oh, I'm so excited.
I define content as information wrapped in entertainment.
Information wrapped in entertainment. Put it on a t-shirt and sell it. That is perfect.
Thank you.
That's exactly what it is, because it's like the information you need to either make a purchase or consider an experience you want to have. And so when you think about your career, what is the content that led you to your position that you have now at UTA?
Well, I don't know if I can define it in the context of content, but I'm going to do my very best. So I joined UTA in 2015, so 7 years ago. July 7th was my 7-year anniversary, 777.
I mean.
And I joined from a law firm. I had been practicing law. My last position as a lawyer was as an art lawyer. Okay. And so the content that defined my career was art, visual art.
Yeah.
And I found myself traveling in the pack of the art world, which was a really, you know, special place to spend time.
Right. So were you protecting people's IPs or more so?
Right. So I was working with artists and collectors and in some cases institutions and galleries. And at the time, you know, 2013, 2014, the art world was a little bit of the Wild Wild West.
It was.
You know, there were multi-million dollar transactions happening without much paperwork.
Right.
You know, not much more than an invoice. And still there are facets of the art world that feel very sort of casual in that regard. And so my job as an attorney was to create clarity around transactions that were happening in the space and also ensure that artists were protected.
Yeah.
And that made my job really enjoyable. Working with artists and protecting their rights and protecting their futures has always been, you know, a driving force for me. So art was the content when I joined UTA.
Okay.
And when I joined, we had just launched the first ever talent agency fine arts division.
Crazy.
And it was a big step into the art world for UTA and just for the entertainment industry in general.
Right.
And it was a divisive moment. Some people thought it was exciting that UTA was getting into the game in the art world. And a lot of people were torn about how they felt about it. So it was slightly controversial. But what we've developed since then is a really incredible department that represents visual artists the same way we represent our traditional talent. And we have this amazing gallery space called UTA Artist Space where exhibitions happen throughout the year and they're often very fun happenings. And so I was a part of the founding team there for that division. And it was a really exciting time.
And so you work with the infamous Arthur Lewis. I mean, a content connoisseur in his own right. And so that is so exciting because, and that kind of speaks to all of the content of your career, because like you said, you were protecting artists, kind of creating some type of transactional record of what was going on. And that speaks to the BC word, blockchain, right? And so how did you go from fine arts into a web area that we're still trying to define?
Yeah, it was the end of 2020.
Okay.
I am at that point in time familiar with cryptocurrency years prior when all things were happening around the crypto boom in, you know, 2017. I'm looking at crypto as a potential investment idea, but very loosely. I was not sophisticated in my understanding of it.
And for anybody listening, what exactly is cryptocurrency?
So cryptocurrency is a decentralized form of currency.
Okay. So there's that word, decentralized.
Right.
Okay.
And decentralized really just means not one owner. So the U.S. currency, our dollar, is governed by the U.S. Mint. In the blockchain world or the decentralized world, there is not one individual owner. So these currencies, which the first was Bitcoin and then later Ethereum, and now there are many, a plethora of currencies to choose from, are not owned by a single governing body. And they instead are owned by a community of people. In some cases, cryptocurrencies have a foundation attached to them. So I'm looking at this in 2017 and I'm thinking this is interesting. And then years go by and it's the end of 2020 and we're all at home. I'm at home on my couch.
Right.
You know,
bored in a house and we're in a house bored. Like,
and, you know, trying to figure out how to both work and live in one space, not seeing a lot of people and hanging out on Clubhouse.
Okay. Yes. Shout out to Clubhouse.
Shout out to Clubhouse. End of 2020. And I see that almost every room in Clubhouse, or maybe it was just mine, almost every room, people are talking about crypto again.
Yeah.
And it just felt like it was a big happening. Everybody's talking about crypto, why I should buy Bitcoin, why I should, you know, be buying Ethereum and why I should be diversifying. But more importantly, there were all these rooms that were dedicated to something called NFTs.
Okay.
And I was intrigued. And I was intrigued because I saw artists hanging out in those rooms.
Right.
And
that was your former world. So you're just like, okay.
What are the artists talking
about?
What
are we talking about now?
Yeah. And what's happening? And so the two things that, you know, after spending a lot of time listening to these conversations that got me excited were, one, artists were selling digital art through this distributed ledger thing, this blockchain thing that I didn't quite
understand
at the time. And they were selling for value. And, you know, having come from the art world and seen how digital art is treated in relationship to physical art, you know, physical art, you understand. You can buy a painting, hang it on your wall, have your friends over for dinner.
Everyone can gawk at it and be like, oh my God, you got the Monet.
Oh, yes. And so digital art is just a harder one for people to wrap their brains around because how do I display it and how do I show people I own it and do I need to have a TV screen constantly running it? And so it had always been sort of a trickier medium for the art world to understand, love, and embrace. And here I see these artists that are selling their work, their digital work, and for really impressive value. And so that was the first thing. And then the second thing was that not only were they participating in the revenue from that first sale, but because of something called a smart contract, they were getting a percentage of any trading royalties in perpetuity, meaning that
it's almost like residuals.
Exactly. And so if somebody were, so if I made a digital work of art and sold it as an NFT, I could build into the smart contract a royalty,
right,
or a residual.
Okay.
And if that buyer, ultimate collector of my piece, decided to resell it for value, regardless of whether that value was higher or lower than they originally purchased it for, automatically 10% will come back to me when somebody else purchases that piece on the secondary market. And again, and again, and again, if that work continues to change hands. And I just thought that was revolutionary. You know, the art market has looked at solving this problem with various laws.
Right. You think about Basquiat and him not really dying almost as a broke artist.
That's
and like the Andy Warhols of the world, the people that gave us so many pop iconic moments that only now through like licensing are their estates, if it's even going to their estates, seeing shit ton of money spent on pieces that they probably couldn't even eat to afford to make.
Right. And there are only a handful of artists.
Yeah.
Similar to Basquiat, who are actually participating in, you know, big licensing schemes,
right,
like his estate. So, you know, Keith Haring comes to mind. But again, only a handful of creators have the ability to kind of, and they're both passed, right?
Right. So, you're just like.
So this was revolutionary to me, that living artists were building essentially a future for a passive revenue stream just for being an artist.
So NFT still feels like, to me, Emperor's New Clothes. Like something I'm not seeing, but everyone else is seeing and participating in. And was it, the beginning felt like kind of like the internet, where people were like, oh, I don't get it. But there was a select few that understood that if we really hone in on what this could be, we can own that market. Do you think that that was what was happening with the NFT market, as people were like, what's an NFT?
I'm glad you said early days of the internet, because I think that's what it feels the most like.
Yes.
You know, I think that still to this day, we're, you know, 2 years into just a really incredible sort of mass attention on what's happening
it's
in
like,
NFTs.
What is this?
And still the question is, what is this and how does it work? And you know, how does this get to this? And how do I hook up my wallet? And everybody's so focused on the complexity of the technology itself
versus the art
versus what's happening. You know, the fascinating things that are happening are community building is happening in real time through, you know, the sale of these, in some cases, unique digital goods.
Yeah.
And that's interesting. The other thing that I found so fascinating is that creators can speak directly to their collectors and their audiences.
Right.
And I see that happening so much in this new, now what we call the Web3 economy or the Web3 ecosystem.
Okay, and I want to go into this ecosystem because there's a lot of buzzwords, right? We talked about NFTs, we talked about decentralization, but do you need to have cryptocurrency to purchase an NFT, or can you purchase it with your like physical American dollars?
Yeah, so it depends, but the answer is you can purchase with cryptocurrency or with what we call fiat currency, or dollars if you're in the US, and it depends on where you're purchasing. So a lot of early crypto platforms, NFT platforms, built in a capability very intelligently where you could not have to necessarily touch crypto. So, you know, the process of purchasing with crypto is still a lengthy one. You need to purchase crypto through an exchange. You need to set up a wallet. You need to be able to then access that wallet and attach it to the NFT marketplace where you're going to purchase your NFT. So we're already three steps in. And I always say, you know, I am one of those people who will shop online and put things in my cart and just never check out.
Right.
And that's just with fiat currency. So imagine if there are tons of people like me out there who aren't willing to go through those processes, take four steps before I
checkout. I'm never going to buy this. Never going to buy this.
And so more and more we're seeing companies build a fiat currency feature, credit card feature into the buying experience itself. And I think that is going to be a necessary evil of onboarding the next millions of audience members into this new ecosystem.
Right. And you say decentralized, meaning the Mint isn't, you know, almost like regulating this, but isn't there like a central group of key players that are overseeing it, like the foundation? Or is it 100 million people that are in this, you know, this group, they control what happens to the money?
So it is truly decentralized.
Okay.
And that means that there are a number of people through whom decisions are made. And it's really a reversal of the idea that you need a key person or...
Right. I'm like, if everyone has an opinion, no one's opinion matters. Like, too many chefs in the kitchen.
And it also works, you know?
Yeah.
It works because individuals act as validators for processes as opposed to, you know, one person holding the power to make the key decision.
Okay. So not a dictatorship, but more of, to your point, it's like
a community. Yeah.
And so the artists that have communities, if they wanted to sell their NFTs, they would basically set up, I'm going to use the M word, a metaverse kind of place where people can go, or is it a website? And then from there, it's like, hey, if you love my art, here's a digital NFT that you can own. How does that kind of start in terms of like how artists kind of speak to their communities and bring their communities to the spaces?
So in my role at UTA, I get to sit at this very exciting nexus between the entertainment community and the Web3 community.
And this is so important. So listen up, listeners.
I spend a lot of time talking to would-be creators in the Web3 space about how to enter. And what I mean by that is they're seeing, oh, I can make, you know, a lot of money, or I can create an online community, or, you know, often the conversation starts with I can make a lot of money because they're reading the headlines.
Right.
And I get to provide information about where to begin. Mm-hmm. And so the where to begin starts with getting involved in the existing community. It's not
starting a new one.
It's not let's start selling stuff.
Right.
Because
you got to speak the language.
Right. And also it's a very specific audience still. You know, you and I were talking before we jumped on about NFT NYC. We were both there. And it is still a very small community. You were saying, I talked to this person and they know you.
Yes.
And it's still a very small but mighty group of individuals who are this core, you know, I call it like the liquid hot lava center of what is happening in the NFT space. And, and so I encourage anybody who's about to jump in to jump into the community first and not jump into selling. But I know your question was,
Do you need Oculuses, or is there a website I go to? Like, how do I get into Web3 to even see what's available for me to purchase?
I'm so glad you asked, do I need an Oculus? Because I think the reason that all of this has accelerated so quickly is that there's no new hardware required. Like, you can buy an NFT and sell an NFT from your iPhone or whatever mobile device
Mobile device, Green bubbles or blue bubbles.
Yeah.
Take your pick. I love it.
Those green bubbles. There's no new hardware required, which is why I think things have moved so quickly and so much adoption has happened over the past several years. But you can create NFTs directly on a marketplace. You can create them. There are so many amazing companies now that will white glove, hold your hand through the process of minting your first NFT. They will also help you customize a smart contract.
Okay.
And define, you know, the terms of your NFTs.
Yeah.
And so there are a number of places where you can begin to sell, to offer something for sale, or even to put something on the blockchain.
Right. Okay. So you don't need additional hardware.
No additional hardware required.
No additional hardware required for NFTs, but the metaverse.
Uh-huh.
Because they kind of all seem to go hand in hand because, and correct me if I'm wrong, NFTs are a non-fungible token.
That's perfect.
What makes something non-fungible?
Okay, great question. So if I have a quarter here,
yep,
and you have a quarter,
uh-huh,
and we trade quarters.
Okay.
We have traded something of equal value.
Okay.
Unless your quarter is a quarter that you had signed by a celebrity.
Okay.
10 years ago.
Okay.
And you've held on to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so your quarter is now valued differently than my quarter.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say in the first example, we're talking about a fungible, right?
Right. Exchange.
Mine and yours, same
equal.
Deal.
Yep.
So money is typically seen as a fungible currency.
Right. I gave you a dollar, you give me a dollar.
Right. And but you have this unique quarter in the second example. That unique quarter, which only was signed by that celebrity in, you know, 2001, and you thought it was a great idea to get a teeny tiny little pen and have that person sign that quarter.
Okay.
But it is unique. There's no other quarter like it in existence.
Right.
And so when I give you my, you know, lame quarter,
yeah,
they're not equal. And so yours is non-fungible.
Because mine
is unique.
Is unique. So non-fungible is like something that's unique. Okay. I mean, I've heard so many explanations. That was the simplest breakdown, unique, non-unique.
Beautiful.
Okay. Okay. All right. So we understand NFTs. You don't know additional hardware required, but the metaverse, they go hand in hand. And so what we consider, you know, somebody like a Nike that's purchasing like 3D printing companies or companies that can make, you know, what are they calling them? Crypto kicks now?
Mm-hmm.
And those are considered NFTs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a digital sneaker that can't be traded for a physical sneaker.
Right.
So one is unique because one is digital. The other one is not so unique because there's physical sneakers all around. And so they go hand in hand because you can wear your NFT crypto kicks in the metaverse.
You could.
Okay. I'm tracking. I'm trying to track this because
yeah, and we're still, you know, I think there are I've heard so many different definitions of the metaverse.
Mm-hmm.
I have a client, my client Thank You X is would say that, you know, because we're here speaking to these microphones with headphones on, we're in the metaverse right now, you
okay.
know. We're in the metaverse when we're on Zoom calls all day.
Okay.
It's the definitions vary so widely.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I think about the metaverse is sort of just digital spaces where we're going to hang out and spend time and consume music and
so
art.
Like a chat room could be the metaverse.
It could be. And so, just like I said, I don't think there's any new hardware required to participate in the Web3 ecosystem. I also don't necessarily think there's a metaverse required, but I do think we're seeing a lot of really interesting innovation around, you know, digital wearables that we're going to, you know,
right.
our avatars are going to wear in these virtual spaces where we're spending time together. And I think we're still in the very early days of seeing how much innovation will happen around those ideas.
And we have to talk about it because it's been talked about, but the idea of Roblox and all of these like gaming communities that have spent a lot of time with digital goods, they're feeling, they are feeling, or they do feel that they have been left out of the NFT Web3 space, even though technically, it kind of feels like the same,
mm-hmm.
right? Like Roblox had all those like celebrity partnerships and different like branding opportunities where it feels like a digital good, just like an NFT.
My perception has been that the gaming community is standing by with a critical eye mm-hmm. around some of the big frothy proclamations
right.
that have been made by, you know, the broader Web3 ecosystem.
Okay.
They're sitting there thinking, we have a metaverse. It's called,
right.
you know, fill in the blank.
Fill in the blank, yeah. Call of Duty. It's whatever it is. It's
like, yeah, and they're highly developed,
right.
beautiful, lifelike, very realistic, you know, built on these very sophisticated game engines. And
yeah.
so my sense has been, you know, that there's some criticism or hesitancy.
Mm-hmm.
And also the other thing that I've observed that I think is interesting is that Roblox is a place where young people... I say young people like I'm, you know.
Right, but we get it,
not
yeah.
Not them, but young people are learning at a very early age to basically spend their lives and their time collecting digital goods.
Mm-hmm. And they use Robux.
Robux.
Which is the same
which
as
is a
cryptocurrency.
It is not a cryptocurrency,
it's not a crypto.
But it is a digital currency.
It's not crypto because it's not on the blockchain.
That's right. And it's not decentralized.
Okay. Because it's owned or controlled by Roblox.
Yeah. So it's like a walled garden ecosystem,
mm-hmm.
you know, that sustains itself where Robux governs the Gucci handbag that you're going to buy in Roblox and
Got
show to
it.
Your friends that you own. But the thing that's so compelling about this, just generally speaking, is that there's a whole generation of people who are going to grow up and not necessarily differentiate between the purchase of a physical
right.
water bottle and the purchase of a digital water bottle.
And that to me is what is so, I guess I can say scary. Like, how do you decipher reality from fiction?
Well, it feels a little dystopian.
Yeah. Like Black Mirror has legit come to life.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I remember as a young person, this idea of the electric car, now
right.
we're talking about self-driving cars, right? And your immediate fascination with that turns into, oh my goodness, we're going to live in a real life version of the Jetsons.
Right.
And
or the Fifth Element. Is.
And so we're just afraid of what we don't know.
And that's
fair. I think that there's a lot of building between this moment that we're in today mm-hmm. and the future of digital collecting that will acclimate us to what the real use cases are for digital goods.
I love it. Why do they call it Web3? Why can't it just be Web2?
Right. Well, Web2, by the way, was an improvement upon
Web1.
That's right. So Web3 is an improvement upon Web2. And I've heard it defined that Web1 was a place where you could read.
Right.
Web2,
very flat,
very flat, one way street, you can mm-hmm. read, you can get information. Web2 was a place or is a place where you can read and write.
So contributing to the information that is currently available, like
yeah.
social media platforms.
And then the big distinguisher is that when you contribute, somebody else owns it.
Right, because you don't own the content you post on any of these social platforms. The platform itself owns it.
Correct.
And
okay. so the improvement upon Web2 that is promised by Web3
is decentralization and ownership of all things that you contribute to the internet.
Yeah. So if Web1 is read, Web2 is read write, then Web3 is read write and own.
I'm telling y'all, this is why Leslie is on content, because you've broken it down and made it consumer facing. And is it easier for you to kind of have these conversations and kind of really take the complexities out of these new vocabulary or new terms because you're speaking to traditional talent that have spent their careers on a big screen and they know I make a movie, this is the typical promotional track, but now it's social media. So we see a lot of celebrities get on social and now it's like Web3. Well, what's my community like a John Wick or somebody that has a huge universe of, or Young Thug or any of those people that can build like, I don't know, Thugger World in the metaverse, you know?
I think that my ability to distill it is because I've had so many conversations like this one,
mm-hmm.
but also because I'm a little bit of a skeptic and a cynic.
Okay.
You know, I am incredibly excited about what I have seen happen in terms of innovation and community building and, you know, value trading hands over the past couple of years.
Yeah.
And also I am careful to really look kind of reflectively at what we're doing and check in with, are we still living in?
Right. You're like, are we still making sense here?
And are we still making sense?
Right. Does 1 + 1 = 2? Okay.
I also just think it's so important, given where I sit, to be able to talk about what we're doing with some simplicity, because everybody's big criticism is, well, what actually is it? You know, it's what we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, I'm like, well, what is it?
Mm-hmm.
And it almost is the things that we've already experienced. They're just redefined and a little bit more enhanced.
That's right.
Okay, so talking about the industry and your skepticism, cryptocurrency has hit the news, and everyone that is anyone that had had billions of dollars in this have lost a lot of money. There's a lot of, you know, Netflix documentaries about this. And now it feels like, and I've heard from some friends that work in the banking space, that investors are trying to right the wrongs and not have another tech boom.
Mm-hmm.
Why did crypto kind of falter and fail where it's faltered and failed at now?
So I would call the time that we're living in today as a market correction. Markets fluctuate.
Right.
As far as I know, cryptocurrency is currently on sale.
Right.
It's a good time to.
A good time to buy.
Yeah. And so obviously, like the stock market, the market changes. It ebbs and flows and it changes over time.
Yeah.
And so with crypto, you see a lot more significant rises and a lot more significant decreases in value because there is no centralized regulatory body that controls some of the volatility. And we're in a moment where the volatility has moved some of the values way lower than they have been for quite a while.
Right.
And if you look historically, like, there's no question that things will come back up. So I think that's what is happening now. And what I'm so encouraged by, actually, is the people who have been in crypto a lot longer than I have, who have endured what people politely refer to it as this crypto winter.
I love it.
Is that they know what to do during periods of
holding and folding,
deflation and value.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just holding, it is building. So if you think about it, this is the first moment in the past couple of years where the stakes are a little bit lower. The expectations for success are a little bit more within the realm of normal. And so there's time for the innovative, brilliant people who've jumped in and are now devoting their career lives to building in the future of the internet or Web3, get to actually build with a little bit of the pressure off and the stakes off. And so I'm very excited, actually, to see what comes out of this period. It'll be like a post-COVID, you know, the renaissance that we were promised.
Right.
The same will be true in the crypto ecosystem.
Once crypto winter is over.
And also, you can't deny that the macroeconomic,
I mean, everything is up and down. I mean, housing demand is down. When housing costs were up and people were like, it's a seller's market. And now it's like, it's no one's market. We got to just hold and wait. And so, and is the exchange rate for crypto, if I give a dollar, do I get like a dollar crypto back?
Great question. It depends on the currency.
Okay.
So every currency is currently sitting at a value that's expressed. If you wanted to look up the current price of Ethereum, you could do that. And so a dollar will probably get you a very small fraction of one Ethereum today.
And there could be pieces that are 100,000 Ethereums.
So I think there are NFTs that live on the Ethereum blockchain that are worth more than $100,000 US.
Wow. This is kind of very interesting, because it's like, what happens to the value of money now? Does it go up or does it go down? And will money have the same value?
I think when you're spending as much time as I do in the crypto ecosystem, you think about a cryptocurrency as having its own value and less about its value in relation to the US dollar.
Right, because when you cash out, you know, I think about all these like spy movies, and they're like, oh, we're going to cash out $30 billion of crypto. I'm like, Do they get $30 billion U.S.? Or is it like, what's happening? The rest is still unwritten. And I know throughout this entire conversation, you've mentioned community, community, community. Mm. I think a lot of people still focus on their audience numbers. Like, how many followers do you have? And followers are definitely audiences. But why are communities going to be almost like key identifying metric for success?
Well, if you think about Web3 as read, write, own.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an improvement upon, you know, Web 2 of read and write,
yeah,
where somebody else owns your content.
Mm-hmm.
Here again, your audience becomes less of an audience and more of a community because you are in this conversation of ownership.
Right.
So you have, as a creator, created something that you own that you then want to transfer ownership to your followers, your,
yeah,
fans. And your fans then hold something that is of value. And they hold something that is of value in connection to you, their favorite creator.
Right.
And that value exchange is meaningful. I've seen it in action just translate into something that's incredibly meaningful. Some of the artists that I represent have communities, Discord, yeah, and or otherwise, where their collectors hang out and talk to each other and help
Discord
each other
like
out.
It's a Slack channel, right?
It is.
Okay.
It's a Slack channel with a lot more complexity.
Okay.
And it's not necessarily the most user-friendly environment at all times, but it is a place where a lot of this Web3 interaction has landed and lives and has lived. And the people who are holders of your collection,
mm-hmm,
are then connected to each other and connected to you.
Right. And this community that you've built.
Yeah. And so there are these kind of legendary communities of holders now, and people help each other. And they also connect over other things that they, you know, all collect.
It's, mm-hmm,
it's no different to me than what I've seen in the art world where,
right,
you know, if you and I both go to a show and we both decide, an art show, and we both decide we want to buy a painting from this,
mm-hmm,
rising star,
yep,
artist, and we want to watch this artist's career, so we want to be early collectors of this artist, and you buy a painting and I buy a painting, and then when we run into each other over lunch, we talk about how much we love our painting,
yep,
that we both bought at the same time, and we stay connected to that artist throughout, you know, the various moments and milestones in that artist's career,
mm-hmm,
and then we high five maybe later when that artist is collected by a major museum, and
right,
we realize that our paintings that we're never going to sell but we love so much have this new appreciated value attached, mm, to them.
That is very interesting because I think a lot of creators are afraid of what their careers will look like once Web3 becomes like formally adopted in everything. And so what you're saying is think about cultivating the community and think about the things you can give your community that keeps them invested in the community.
Oh, I think that's where everything is heading.
Yeah.
I think that that is what creators want today, is to build a lasting, mutually beneficial relationship with their fans.
Yeah. It's almost like Paramount Plus. It's almost like Peacock. All of these various cable companies creating their own streaming platforms because their community of fans or followers or viewers are watching a collection of shows,
yeah,
that belong to that community. And so you might buy Paramount, but you might not buy Peacock,
mm-hmm,
because you're in the Paramount community.
And imagine how powerful it is if your community can decide to sustain something, some piece of content,
mm-hmm,
that you are giving to them. So, you know, I had a conversation recently with a high-ranking executive at one of these studios.
Yeah.
And he said, we cancel shows that have millions of fans all the time. And in the Web3 ecosystem, there's this possibility that
you could keep a show running.
Those beloved fans who are just absolutely obsessed with that show, those millions of fans,
yeah,
can hold power and have sway over the content that they continue to experience because they're a group and they're a community and they hold some piece of ownership in that content.
And would you say this will enhance or dramatically change the direction or course for how content is created and distributed?
Oh, I think it could radically change how we think about the creation of, the community building around, and the distribution of content.
Ugh. Okay. Well, we have come to the portion. Well, actually, you know what? I'm going to ask you one more question about this, because I think with Web3, brands getting into it,
yes,
you know, I think the sustainability of a creator for the most part is the selling of their art. And, you know, our creators right now are selling their ability to create content in promotion or wrap that information about a product around the entertainment of how they use it. And so when brands get into this space, is it more so the collaboration with the creator, or can brands themselves, as they've been doing, become more and more creative in the content that they're distributing?
We've seen examples of both. Mm-hmm. We've seen, you know, a major beverage brand release NFTs of, you know, cans of their beverage.
Yes, I've seen this.
Which, you know, to varying reaction. But we've also seen really innovative brands shine a light on the unique creators that are being born of this new ecosystem. And that's what gets me very excited.
Right.
So, you know, at UTA, we worked with L'Oreal Paris on their first foray into the NFT space. And one of the things that they chose to do as a part of their first moves in the space was to shine the L'Oreal light on female creators in the NFT space.
Mm.
You know, coming out of last year, the statistics were pretty ugly around male creators versus female creators. And,
right.
And,
like, is this another boys club?
Transaction volume. Yeah, yeah. And so L'Oreal Paris, being the, you know, women's empowerment brand that they are, decided to create a platform for five incredible female creators. And I think that's the real opportunity here is... collaboration is so simple and and so elegantly done in this space. And so we've seen it time and time again. And that seems to really work. And it also is authentic to what's happening in the space.
Yeah. And well, all of this community building, all of this, like, you know, marginalization almost of like shared experiences or just shared thought, will this divide us more? Because it feels like if I can go into the Web3 and be with a community that thinks exactly like me, that could be more divisive to the real world, right? Or do you think it would connect us more?
Well, that would mean that you have to assume that platforms are uniting people.
True, fair, touche.
And I think that we're in a day and age where creators create on platforms because it's where their audience seems to keep showing up.
Right.
And they don't have an alternative.
Right.
But they also have some distrust in these platforms. And so I think that, sure, there's a potential for divisiveness with any new technology, but I also think there's a potential for great new unity. Unity of the individual group united around some buddy or some piece of content that they are a super fan of, and also communities that overlap each other having unity as well.
Final question before our rapid fire. If someone wants to get into this space, just kind of start to familiarize themselves, educate themselves, because it is coming.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you have a very, you know, important job at UTA in ushering talent and finding new talent into this space. How and where do people start?
That's a great question. Well, hopefully this podcast is helpful.
Absolutely.
Somewhat. And I think that a lot of the community lives on Twitter. So get on Twitter, follow me, follow who I follow, you know, and I follow some really brilliant minds in the community, and that's where I get a lot of great information about what's going on in the space. And I also read a ton of newsletters and I read what's in the news. I read the same headlines that you're reading, and then I dig a little bit deeper.
Right.
I'm looking at some of the crypto native news sources. Like, I love NFT Now. I love an Instagram handle called Metaverse.
I love NFT Now, actually.
Yeah, and so I follow these handles on Twitter and on Instagram, and I get breaking news. And so those are great places to begin. There's also a great new book out by a UTA client, Matthew Ball, called Metaverse.
I'm going to buy it.
It's the one.
Okay.
And so there are plenty of places to grab information about what's happening in this space, and it's not too late. I think that's the other thing I want to say, is that there's so much information and so much overwhelm around just trying to understand.
Like, is it crypto? Is it NFT? Is it Web3? It's like, ah.
And I think the thing that I just want to say is that it's still early days.
Right.
And if you're learning about this now and getting into it, you know, welcome to the frontier.
I mean, it's definitely the new frontier. So we've come to the portion of the show called Rapid Fire. I'm asking you four questions. You're going to tell me who's on content. So for example, when I say your favorite form of content, you can say alcoholic beverages or trips or books. It doesn't have to be a social platform. It's just whoever's supplying the content for your life.
Okay.
All right.
I'm ready.
Okay. So your favorite form of content, who's on content?
This is going to be surprising, but unscripted television, reality TV.
You know what? That checks out, because honestly, you're like, my life ain't nowhere near this bad.
That's exactly right.
It's an equalizer. That's why I watch it. I'd be like, oh, these people are terrible.
It's incredibly enjoyable. I'm watching Love Island right now.
Oh my gosh. Have you heard of F-Boy Island?
I have.
I mean, the idea that these shows are getting greenlit left and right.
I'm watching them all.
And you're watching them all. Okay, so unscripted reality, you are such a agent at the unscripted.
People I also like, listen what? To a lot of podcasts.
Podcasts?
Okay, I do.
So podcasts and unscripted. You need a reset. Who's on content?
I need a reset. I'm not consuming content.
Interesting.
Or I'm reading a book. Analog.
Okay, analog. That's still content, but books, you're like, no digital content. I need
a reset. I gotta get out in nature.
Into nature. Hiking.
I gotta go for a long walk. I gotta get on an airplane and go
unplug.
Somewhere. Yes.
I love that. Okay. When you need to be inspired, who's on content?
Again, I'm getting out and seeing the world. You know, I think the big contrast today is we're spending so much more time indoors, and I'm spending so much time on Zoom. So if I need to be inspired, I gotta take my eyes off the monitor, and I need to be out looking at real
human life.
Yeah, that's right.
I love it. Okay, final rapid fire. When you need to feel joy, who's on content?
I am hugging my dog.
Oh, what's your dog's name?
Fisher.
Fisher. What kind of dog is Fisher?
He's a mix. He's a rescue. Oh, shout out to Wags and Walks.
I love that.
And they found me my perfect little buddy, and he's a pandemic pup. And when Fisher. I need to feel joy, I'm looking at that little dude.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Okay, Leslie, we've talked about a lot of things. You've given us a lot of information, but you've also broken it down and simplified a lot of things for us. What is the future of our industry? I mean, we've seen traditional media. I mean, the landscape has totally changed. We've seen artists in those spaces, artists that you've represented through, you know, your law practices, and just artists that UTA have represented from a traditional sense. Everyone's industry is changing. But what is the future of where we're going?
I think we're going to see a lot of disruption and consolidation, in large part because of all of this exciting new technology that we've been talking about today. And that gets me really intrigued about the future of how we think about content, how we finance content, how we create, you know, fan communities around content, and how content's distributed. And I think ultimately the future is really bright.
Oh, I love that. Some optimism in this world today. We need that.
Mm-hmm.
Leslie, you are amazing. And we thank you for joining us on Who's on Content.
Thank you so much for having me. I've been dreaming about this day for a long time.
It was so good. Thanks again for listening. Be sure to follow us at The Real DBA and give us a rating and leave us a review. See you next week.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.